That wasn't hard, was it? That was easy. That was great.
No.
Welcome, everyone, to the August 2023 edition of The Impact, a sustainable CT podcast. For your edification, your enlightenment, and your entertainment, too. I'm Jim Hunt, Communications Manager at Sustainable CT, so if you're looking for someone to blame for this podcast, well, you can blame me. But remember, this is never a one-way conversation. We always want to hear from you for our edification and enlightenment. Drop us a note, won't you, to info@sustainablect.org. The Impact is brought to you in part by the Connecticut Green Bank. The Connecticut Green Bank confronts climate change by increasing and accelerating investment into Connecticut's green economy to create more resilient, healthier, and equitable communities. And we are oh so glad they do. Visit them at ctgreenbank.com. Remember, Sustainable CT is independently funded. We don't receive support from any level of government or from a university, not even from a magical rainbow unicorn money tree, no sir, but you can be a Sustainable CT sponsor. Find out how at sustainablect.org. Like most small nonprofit organizations, and not unlike many small companies and organizations of any variety, really, Sustainable CT struggles to organize, manage, and master its data. What starts out as a few well-meaning spreadsheets turns into myriad stovepipes of unrelational, poorly searchable, and wholly ineffective jumble. And you know, we can freely admit that this is not our area of expertise, nor should it be. Things like CRM, that's customer relations management, by the way, project management, budget and resource allocation, research analytics, and these are all things about which we know enough to be dangerous, but hardly enough to be productive and cost effective. And thank goodness for the Connecticut Data Collaborative, CT Data. With its in-depth data strategic planning process, CT Data has helped us define, refine, even discover our data needs and firmly conceptualize the structure and tools we need to employ in data management. So we're having a conversation today with Finola Darby Hutchins, Finn to us, Director of Data Strategic Planning at CT Data Collaborative, to discuss, as she puts it, helping organizations learn how to measure their impact, improve their storytelling, and develop new ways to evaluate the power of their mission. Finn has a bachelor's degree from Trinity College Hartford, the mighty, mighty Bantams, and earned a master's in public administration from the University of Connecticut. Go Huskies. She brings a decade of nonprofit management experience to data strategic planning, so we are very pleased that she has taken the time to chat with us and share her experience with our audience. Let's not forget to mention that CT Data consultation services were made available to Sustainable CT through a generous grant from the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. Joining Finn today is our own Lynn Stoddard, Executive Director of Sustainable CT. It's always good to have her along on our adventures, but I know she has a special interest in our data management, so it's extra special to have her input today. Lynn founded our plucky little organization way back in 2017 with several years of planning and development proceeding. She has over 25 years of experience in developing public policy and managing a broad range of environmental programs, including a long tenure with the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. We recorded our conversation via Zoom on August 7th, 2023. Let's listen. Finn, it's great to see you. Thank you for being here. And Lynn, it's always great to have you join us to bring some extra star power to our humble podcast. So thank you for taking the time as well. Finn, let's get right to it. I wanted to ask you how you first became involved with CT Data Collaborative. What's the story behind that?
Sure, Jim. And thanks again so much for having me and CT Data here on the podcast today. And Lynn, thanks for sharing the space. So my journey with Connecticut Data Collaborative has been long. So about 11 to 12 years ago, I worked for a consulting firm in the New Haven area that was actually a part of facilitating the startup of this nonprofit organization. And before I had even fully understood what the Connecticut Data Collaborative was going to be, I was actually tasked with a fair amount of the administrative functions of what it takes to start up a nonprofit. And then I stepped away for a long time. In the in-between years, I then collaborated closely with Michelle both as a consultant for C2 Data across a number of different projects, and then also as a confidant and professional peer in leading organizations. And then I must admit, I have been a longtime consumer of C2 Data. They provide really great access to public data. And as a former person responsible for a lot of development and advocacy, having the access to public data was really incredibly important. And that took us to collaborating on some larger projects like our public mapping of eviction files.
Well, then, Lynn, why don't you follow up on that? And how did Sustainable CT become involved with CT Data?
We've been struggling with data. It's been the top of my list for a couple of years to have a comprehensive data platform where we can store information about towns, certification, records, and what they're working on for sustainability action, success stories, as well as kind of tracking our impact through the Sustainable CT program. So one day I was at a conference with a program director from Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, and I was kind of desperate, and she had given us a grant for a housing project. And I said, "Erica, I have this problem I really need help with. We just really need help with data. Do you know of anyone?" And she said, "Oh, yeah. CT Data Collaborative. In fact, we fund them to work with nonprofits and do a little cohort learning model." And I said, "Wow, that's awesome." So anyway, it led to us applying, and the timing was a little tight, but CT Data was very gracious in accepting us into the cohort last spring, winter, spring. So that's how we connected, and Ben's been our main contact and teacher there, and it's been awesome.
And Lynn, when your name came across in the application pool, I was so delighted to see you guys, because I've been a longtime fan of Sustainable CT's work, but also I've been a reviewer of your actions. So it was just fun to see all those paths cross. And I was like, yes, let's go. So very exciting.
It is a match made in heaven, for sure. I mean, you've put in a lot of time with us that we really appreciate. And it's helped me a great deal just being on the receiving end and being involved in that, to see the mechanics of our data processing differently. And towards that end, let me just ask you, you're working with something called the data strategic planning method. Explain that a bit more for us. What does it mean? Why do you use it that way? What's involved in that?
Sure. So as you just shared, Jim, Sustainable CT is in the middle of a data strategic plan, and it is a data coaching service that we provide to nonprofits and public agencies, organizations doing mission-driven work that lasts between 12 to 18 months, depending upon the speed with which an organization is able to work. And our goals for data strategic planning are to increase the capacity of organizations to build data infrastructures that allow them to be data informed in all of their decision making. So everything from staffing to resources, to grant reporting. And really, we hope that with this increased capacity and stronger data infrastructures, the leaders of nonprofits can have an ability to look across their programmatic scope and see, where are we making large impact? Where do we need to increase our impact? Which of our initiatives are not all that effective? Which of our initiatives most effective? And we hope to then be able to take the finite resources of nonprofits and help them to be able to increase the efficacy of those finite resources. It is not a fast process. And I will say it's grounded in increasing the data literacy of organizations. We are not interested in organizations having to marry a consultant. We want to teach you how to fish and send you on your way.
Lynn, how has that data strategic planning figured in our process? How has it helped us, do you think?
It's been great. And I'll confess, as I said, I've had this on my list for a couple of years, and we were already investigating some things with a consultant and kind of jumping the gun on solutions. So Finn has been very gracious with my impatience and taught me how to be a little more patient. Every day, probably 10 times a day, I shout into my home office, "Ah, we just need a data platform. I can't stand this anymore." But going through the planning process has been great. It's really looking at not just what we need to cough up for grant reports and what we think we need, but thinking strategically and really bigger, like kind of starting with the big questions as they have us do. And how will we really know that we're doing the work in the world that we were created to do and that we say we're doing? So it's super important. And, you know, sometimes you have to slow down to speed up. And this is the case with that. And we're just really lucky that the opportunity came along at just the right time.
Absolutely. Finn, what do you find to be the greatest common challenge to nonprofits regarding data management?
So I find two, and I think two really common challenges that I see kind of over and over again. And Lynn nailed it. Capacity is a huge constraint. There is such an urgency in the work that nonprofit professionals do and that really vocational leaders do, right? And so to ask them to slow down, to stop that urgent work that needs to be done tomorrow to serve very high needs communities and constituencies and keep operations flowing in smaller organizations where people wear many hats, capacity seems to be the largest challenge, especially for leadership. One of the ways I've tried to mitigate that is over the course of data strategic planning. We used to have a fair amount of work for the organization to take on in between each sort of consultation session. And I have really limited that so that organizations have fewer hours to spend. I've kind of taken on some of the work myself, but that's okay because I'm still, we are also a mission-driven organization. So we are still achieving that. And Jim, I'd say the other problem and issue that I see sort of built up as frustration for nonprofits is there is no one data tool that will solve everybody's data needs. And there is a wealth of opportunities to purchase like really expensive software and find quote unquote quick solutions that I think often leave nonprofit organizations kind of wedded to a consultant with a very expensive piece of software they don't need, that they only use to a limited capacity. So those are sort of the two challenges, and we hope to remedy both through data strategic planning.
Lynn, I want to get you in on this and on your thoughts of what those challenges might be, but just a quick follow-up. Do you think that these are challenges that are endemic to nonprofits particularly, or is it more organizationally across the board?
Could speak or to across all organizations. I think it is endemic to nonprofits and public agencies. Yeah. You know, any organization that has finite fiscal resources, especially, or any organization that has, you know, low to no administrative time, right? And so I think that those are problems that are more endemic to sort of the public nonprofit sphere.
Okay. Lynn, what do you see of the challenges that we share or that we have, particularly to our organization, but that might be shared across nonprofits that we work with in terms of data management?
I think knowing what you need for data, which is, you know, the point, as we've discussed, of the strategic planning. Yeah. Time and capacity and money. Obviously, that's just the DNA of nonprofits. I think also, like, I was surprised at one of our recent sessions with Finn that I guess I kind of thought there were more technology opportunities out there than it seems there are. And so I always thought I was missing something. We were researching the typical platforms you hear about, but we didn't want to just have a CRM. We wanted to have something that's tracking all our data from towns. And we have a zillion different spreadsheets that track all our information, and none of them are tied together. So it sounds like there's no silver bullet, which to me, I still find really hard to believe. Like, someone's not out there that has like a really robust CRM that's tied to all of your data stuff, but it's also tracking like your contact lists and emails and interactions of communication with the towns or stakeholders or funders or whatever. So I guess the solution is still going to be a little bit of patchwork. At least maybe I'll feel comforted in knowing that it's not because we didn't do our research. Because if Finn says it doesn't exist, then I'm good with that. And I don't need to research anymore. But I found that a little startling. And yeah.
Interesting. And I'm sure that a sales rep for a tech company would say, no, we can do all those things, right?
Right.
And we find that they often will, and then we'll get deep into the work and realize that they can't. And so, for example, I have a client currently who has purchased one of these very expensive systems and learned quickly that they were unable to separate fields for families that had parents who were separated, even though that was specifically one of the questions we asked during the consultation phase. So I think it's like one of those things that, you know, everybody has a job to do. Like a sales rep is trying to sell you a product and I'm trying to make sure that you have low cost solutions. And right. And so I think some of that gets lost. I will say the patchwork, what we hope to achieve with data strategic planning, because I understand that patchwork deep in my soul and the frustration that patchwork of data systems and Excel spreadsheets for staff and leadership. We try to make it much smaller and we try to make sure that it is all incredibly meaningful so that you're not collecting data you don't need or data that doesn't do anything, or you collect a bunch of data and you don't use it, right? Or, you know, we try to also get rid of legacy data, like we've collected this for years, therefore we do. And then we also try to build systems, although I don't think this is the problem for sustainable CT, but maybe an issue for some of your municipalities, is to make sure that all data collection is electronic. Some of the smaller nonprofits, and I think smaller towns in Connecticut, are still very much on pen and paper.
Yeah.
And so we do, that is a solution in the data strategic planning, that we try to make sure we've moved past the pen and paper data entry stage. So,
you know, one of the things I think is a challenge right across the board with every organization. And one of the things that this process addresses in a very fundamental way, in a positive way, is that we don't know what we don't know. And we don't understand a lot of the time that data can be attached to a lot of different things that are beyond the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's obvious when you talk about accounting or bookkeeping, oh, there's data involved. You know, if you're counting apples and oranges in some way, shape or form, the very obvious methodology of data. But there is so much data attached to so much more in an organization, a social service organization such as ours might do. And whether that's even opinions provided in a certain context, how our actions are being used over calendar days. There are things that we can apply data to that will really help us. And we can integrate that together if we find the right system to have that integration, relational database. That, I think, is a challenge that this process is helping us to address and find a positive end to. That's one way I'm looking at it too.
Well, I'm just going to put it out there. In terms of like collecting data that's not meaningful, with all due respect, which is a dangerous way to start a sentence, you know it's coming, to funders, we are often asked to track ridiculous things that are very time consuming.
Yeah.
And while I understand that type of data might be valuable to their mission in some respects, it's irrelevant to our work and has, no meaning. So I guess it's not really a question. It's just a reflection that nonprofits are stuck with that. And there's the power dynamic of funders and fundies. And
yeah,
I'm always looking for partners to help enlighten funders on some of that. I mean, we have some really amazing enlightened funders, many of ours, who are very responsive to our needs and not at all kind of set in data collection. Some of the other smaller funders that work with a ton of organizations and give out a lot of little grants, which we're one of, are the ones who have like a cookie cutter thing. And those are the trickier ones, because you might only be getting $2,000 for the grant and you're spending inordinate amounts of time. So anyway, I don't know. I just figure since you work in this, you might have some reflections on that. And I would love to see like some I don't know, conferences, presentations at funder events where how to make the data collection for your fundees a little less onerous. And I don't know, just kind of like putting themselves in our shoes.
I couldn't agree more, Lynn. And I said, I think you're 100% correct in, you know, suggesting sometimes we have to collect data that isn't meaningful because the person who signs the check wants this data point, even though it doesn't. I would hope to be able to frame it in a way for data strategic planning that we have decided to collect this data point or that data point and make it meaningful because that's how we raise X funds or Y funds. I do think, I mean, if I could solve all the problems of the world, I would make all of the foundations come together and go through data strategic planning themselves and develop some shared metrics. And then I would develop like a common app. Okay, so you know how students can apply to several colleges using one application? Like, I would love a common app and a common report. I am hopeful it does seem to be that philanthropy in general, like the larger scale philanthropy, is moving towards that. Not quite the common app dream goal here, but they are moving more towards sort of trust-based philanthropy. You're seeing a few more general operating supports. But I agree, those small grants that have huge reports that require you to go and take a picture with the blank check, with a big check, and it's really time consuming for organizations. And having spent my entire career in the public sector, I just stand in solidarity with you, Lynn.
Well, thanks. I'm glad I was able to get that off my chest and that you're standing in solidarity.
We'll return to our program in just a moment. You've been listening to The Impact, a sustainable CT podcast. Hey, while you're out there tripping the web fantastic, don't forget to join us on Facebook for some fun and interesting stuff. Guaranteed safe for children and pets. Come on, be our friend, won't you? At facebook.com/sustainableCT. And we, like millions of others, have hopped on the Instagram Threads bandwagon at instagram.com/sustainableCT and threads.net/@sustainableCT. And yes, of course, we're LinkedIn. Search for Sustainable CT from your LinkedIn page and you'll find us right there, being all LinkedIn and media social. And if you're not yet a subscriber to Actions and Impact, the Sustainable CT newsletter, you could be missing out on some very important information to you, to your organization, and to your town. Accept no substitutes. Do yourself a favor and subscribe today. And you can do that where? At sustainablect.org, of course. Let's get back to the program. Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation here about data and CT Data Collaborative. Looking at your website and looking into CT Data Collaborative's background, vision, mission, one of the things you have as a part of your values is data for equity. And I just wonder if you would speak to that. Tell us what it means to you, what it means to CT Data. And I'm interested in that. What does it mean?
Sure. So one of our values, I'm sure you saw it, is like our strategic values, is that we connect people and data for good. And so data must be equitable to achieve that mission, you know, that mission or that vision. And the struggles or the barriers or the mountains we try to climb to make sure data is equitable is removing bias from data throughout data processes, data collection and data storage, because data isn't neutral. We think it is, right? And we challenge every day that society believes that because there's a data point for it, that data point is in fact fact, right? But data is inherently biased because people are a part of every step of the process of data, right? They collect the data, they record the data, they store the data, they analyze the data. And so one of the things, some ways we mitigate that is we really include data ethics in all parts of our training. Things for practitioners and for novice data users and for organizations to take into consideration. Lynn attended a data ethics workshop as well. And it's pretty high level. It's just scratching the surface, but I do think it is important for folks to really think about, wait a second, how are my own biases impacting my analysis of this data? Another way that we promote and practice data for equity is data must be community informed. You cannot have an accurate collection or an accurate analysis or reporting of data without understanding the community that's being represented in the data, right? And so we serve as a convener most often between folks really interested in the data and the communities impacted by the data. I think kind of similar to Sustainable CT, like convening groups of organizations and municipalities and grassroots groups together to make sure that practices around data and data collection are truly community informed. And we do this at a local level, right? So we've had residents of Hartford help us better understand 311 data, which is where residents are able to call and complain about general nuisance, right? And we've also had it at a federal level where we serve as the state census data center. So we've had connected census.gov, as you formally know it, with members from the MENA community, the API community, the Black and Latino community, so that they can share with the folks collecting data how they need to and want to be represented in data collection. And the reason that this is all so important, especially now, and why it's a vision we lean really hard into, is we are at a moment in society where truths are being challenged pretty much with great regularity, and where fiction becomes fact with tremendous speed, and the amount of misinformation is rampant. And so ensuring that we are steadfast in our commitment to equitable data practices helps us to ensure that the data that we share, the data that we collect, the data that we store, and the data that we report out on is actually a reflection of equitable engagement and is actually a reflection of truth and not continuing the spread of disinformation.
That is admirable. Lynn, do you have any thoughts?
I mean, I think it's great and wholeheartedly agree. As you know, we have a strong foundation in equity in our program, and I think we've grappled with it as a team in not necessarily data, but how do we use the stories of people we work with, and how do we respect right. their input on what they think about our program or, you know, issues around their town or whatever. How do you validate that? How do you, you know, someone's story and someone's experience is a very valuable resource as well. And I think we're all learning that you can't take that for granted, and you need to somehow, you need to show respect and compensation or whatever is appropriate as well.
Lynn, you attended our annual conference, and that is truly a goal of our annual conference. And I recently heard an advocate suggest saying, rather than amplify the voices of people of color, just hand them the microphone. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was a great way to, you know, we're not giving them anything that they didn't already have. Just give them the mic. And so we really take that very seriously. And I think that was really some of the goals of our annual conference, where we brought in speakers from the Blackwell Data Center and folks doing equitable data work in Connecticut and understanding data gaps around data equity. So I do think that there's opportunities, even if it just means we make the space, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And as I'm thinking of one in particular, housing work we were doing through a grant with Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, of helping to bring the voices of those most impacted by lack of housing choice or housing inaffordability to connect their experience with town planners. And even that, you know, you're building up expectations by asking people a question. So we had to tell the planners, like, you have to be really earnest about using this information and not just, making sure that you're actually listening and caring about this. And in that case, these people are not typically appearing at public meetings and public hearings. So finding a way that they can give that input that's convenient for them in a respectful place. And, you know, in some cases, they felt intimidated to express things to town. So we kind of acted as an intermediary and then asked permission if we could share anything that they shared, or if they wanted to share things themselves, and we compensated them for their time. So yeah, I think there's a lot to learn about that in so many different settings. But you guys did a great job at the conference, and I think yeah, that was really, really fascinating.
And Lynn, you touched on two really like simple things in data ethics and really approaching data gathering in an equitable way that I want to like shout out to all the nonprofits in the world. You can do this too. Is really being accountable to the folks you're collecting the data from, right? So whether that's making sure your reports are readable and delivered to them, that you're actionable on what they're suggesting to you, that you like listen intently. You know what I mean, right? As you said, because it does. When you ask people questions, they expect, you know, accountability. And then the other thing you suggested that I think is just tremendously important is compensation, right? And so if we're asking people for their time, then we need to be able to make sure we're paying for their time.
Yeah, I find this fascinating because, I mean, you know, the erroneous assumption is that data can't be biased. It's just numbers. Numbers are numbers. How can they be biased? And of course, the great slam and legitimate fear of say artificial intelligence today is that it can very easily be biased. And if your data is based on white male homophobic, I mean, pick your, you know, scary vision. If that's where the data is coming from, you know, garbage in, garbage out, and what will arrive from that data, it will necessarily be biased too. And I just having an organization like yours really conscious of that and trying to affect that space is really important, especially for organizations like our own, to stay honest, stay on it, and make sure we're doing it the right way and representing people as they are. Like you say, honesty, truth in the data, and finding it, working hard to actually find it. Because sometimes you do. These communities are not all out there with the microphone in their hand. And sometimes you really got to go the extra mile to make sure they get that microphone in their hand. Tell me, Finn, you've had some successes with organizations such as ours. I assume, and I hope to. Do you have some success stories that you could share with us that you would find meaningful?
I sure do. So I'll share a couple of different examples, if that's all right. And I'm just grateful you're allowing us to share our success. It's so important. So HCCC is a client of mine that's almost completed with their data strategic plan. Uh-huh. And they are such a wonderful community action organization that really serves people in critical need in the Hockenham Valley area of Connecticut. And they do a myriad of different programs, everything from providing access to a food pantry to transportation at low cost, no cost for elderly individuals. And so their work is awe-inspiring. And like every good nonprofit, they also needed some data help. And so we're just finishing up their implementation phase of data strategic planning. We've been working with them for a little bit over a year. Again, this is not slow. And their director of their food pantry had never previously had a way to think about how much food comes in and how much food comes out, and if that is impacted by the season or the day of the week or what's available in the food pantry. And together, and they have done a ton of work, not just us, but they have also done a ton of work, have built systems for him to be able to better target the impact, like, and better understand the needs of his food pantry. And why that's so important is because he can then suggest that he needs more resources around a specific month or a specific day or a specific week as a result of, you know, measuring what comes in and what goes out in a way that he hadn't before. And so I think that that is like a small success, but when you take those small pieces and you just build on them year after year after year after year, in a perfect world, they'll have a trend, right? And then they'll be able to really better understand how far their resources can go across a length of time. Another, I think, really powerful success that we've had is with an organization that simply needed quick metrics to be able to report to their board and not spend several days preparing for board meetings. And so rather than invest in a very expensive, like sort of dashboard product, I built them kind of a simple dashboard on Excel and showed them how to update the data every month. And then the dashboard on the front of Excel just automatically updates. And so they don't have to do any work. They just have to share the front sheet of their Excel at the beginning of their board meeting. And so this saved out hours of time for them because they didn't have to collect like a whole month's metrics prior to every meeting. So those are two smaller data strategic planning successes. We've had some really phenomenal successes with our large public data. We were able to target outreach with Get Out the Vote by looking at who votes and where they live. We were able to increase housing investments in the North End with our Health and Hartford Neighborhoods data platform. And then we also contribute or built and continue to maintain the Women and Girls data platform, which helps to understand the disparate need and impact on women and girls, which we know has actually supported receiving funding for both the YWCA and because of the data that they were able to access so publicly. And then I think our big claim to fame is probably the work we've done analyzing Connecticut's eviction filings, the work, the public accessibility of being able to understand not just the number, the quantity of eviction filings in Connecticut, but also who was being evicted and where, helped us to be able to make claims that women and specifically Black women were disproportionately impacted by eviction, which helped to increase the legislature to respond. And so increasing data, like in kind of in summary, Jim, like it's small to large, right? But they all like advance the needle in our mission-driven work in a variety of different ways.
Lynn, I don't know if you want to comment on that, but I wanted to ask you in turn what you think success looks like to us, to you, to Sustainable CT. What would success look like in this area for us?
Well, internally, we find the magic gizmo that tracks everything easily. But yeah, for us, a lot of the success of this is about not wasting a ton of our time tracking things, because we do have data sources. They're just not connected. And so we have to resort for which community foundation region the town is in, or which COG, it's Council of Governments it's in, or whatever. So, you know, the magic gizmo aside, I think that we really want towns. A lot of our program, we like to say it was developed by towns for towns. And when we run webinars, we have towns telling their story to other towns on ways to implement actions. So I think part of the success would look like towns having access to their own data to tell their story easily, which is either data we're feeding them or some shared thing. And that is something towns have, as you know, Jim, we've been working on. Towns have requested, like, this is great. You have our whole certification report on your website, but it's not really that fun to read. And we can't really use it to tell our residents and businesses who want to locate here or people who want to move here all the great things the town has done and why we're Sustainable CT Silver certified or whatever. So, you know, our program at its core is about connecting people within communities and making all communities better places to live for everyone. So having a simple way for towns to share that story of the work they've done, I think would be amazing to achieve some success with that.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, we want to support the towns in what they're doing and the successes they make, or that they're trying, even aspirationally, the successes they're trying to reach. We want to support that. That's our end game. And how can we best support that? By providing them meaningful data. And then, as Lynn is saying, taking that data and making it in a digestible, informational, you know, shareable media that you can then turn around and engage the community. And that's, again, you know, kind of ultimately what we're trying to do too. I, you know, from a communications point of view, I've always, the things that I would really love to be able to see, we have lots of data stovepiped in our little spreadsheets, and being able to have them be relational so that the hip bone is connected to the leg bone and we know it is, and you can find, and that kind of information being at your fingertips is really helpful. And then also being able to find data that we can use to show the towns and show prospective towns who might want to join our program this is the success that you can have, and whether that's based on, say, the number of the energy savings or the dollar savings therefrom, or, you know, these hard numbers that we can point to as success stories would be very helpful too. And again, connecting that all together with all of the myriad other elements of our actions, that'd be huge in terms of success for us. Do you work with, Finn, do you work with the state a great deal? You had mentioned the legislature and having, you know, affecting their actions with underlying information and data. Do you supply them with a good deal of information or no?
As much as we would like to, we have done projects with different state agencies, and we're certainly excellent colleagues with the folks at OPM, and conveniently discuss sort of, you know, data strategies and their, we understand each other's work. CG Data is releasing a new strategic plan and new mission statement, in the early fall. And that is a big part of it. Connecticut is kind of a data desert in a lot of ways. And there used to be more research, within the legislature, but we don't even have a research center at our flagship university, right? There is subject specific research centers, but there's not a general data warehouse, right? And so there's a data and research gap, right, across our policy landscape. And one of the things that I drove us crazy this past session was the housing advocates trying to pass rent caps for tenants across the state. And as an advocate and real pro-tenant, I had big ambition for that legislation to pass, but nobody, advocates or opponents or on either side of the aisle, had any research on the impact of rent caps, what it would cost, what it wouldn't cost, right? What other places have seen, how it would impact, you know, fair market values for homeowners. There was like just no research at all to help promote the policy either way. And so we've often said, like, if we had just been able to do it, right, we would have been able to get the legislation over the finish line. So I think in the future, CG Data, with our own capacity constraints, hopes to get involved more in the policy space so that folks can make informed decisions.
That would be helpful to think of our legislature going blind without firm data analysis. That's rather scary, you know, sure.
I mean, yeah. Right. Think about it. I mean, Lynn, you've probably lobbied in the legislature. I mean, so often it's the leadership of an organization creating a very quick fact sheet to get to their lawmakers and doing the very best they can, but they're not researchers. They don't have skills and access to public data. It's not something they do every day, you know? And so it's very difficult to compile that legislation or that research to move legislation forward. I mean, guilty as charged. I've made the fact sheet, right? So, you know, definitely, I don't think that this is unique. I think it is, again, about really leaning in deep to making sure that we have the ability to stand tall in an environment and in a world where there is so much disinformation.
Absolutely. Finn, are there, you hold events throughout the year and all sorts of workshops, and tell us what's coming up that we should know about, that we want people to know about.
Sure. So there's a few things coming up. So we operate what we call CG Data Academy, which is a series of one-time or maybe two-time workshops. And we offer them across the state, and they're super low cost. I think $5 to $15 for somebody to attend. And the offer everything from data storytelling, which is, as Lynn, as you were talking, and Jim, as you were talking about how to share stories, I was like, oh, let me add data storytelling to their technical assistance list, right? To just intro to data, to building your data literacy, to unlocking insights and understanding population data better. So if I want to encourage folks to go to our website, ctdata.org, ctdata.org, and head to the event calendar. Our next training is on August 17th, and it's understanding population data for better decision making. And if you are a grant writer and you need to express need, this is an excellent training to attend. And I'm fairly certain it's remote. And then we also have Intro to Data, Building Your Data Literacy, being hosted in Hamden on September 14th. And then I would say, as folks wander over to our website, again, that's c2data.org, click to sign up for our newsletter. We send one out every month, and that has all of our events on it as they come up.
Excellent.
I'll just say that I'm really grateful for the partnership with CT Data and Finn in particular spending so much time with us. And shout out to Hartford Foundation for Public Giving for supporting this. I mean, we basically get a year and a half of incredible free consulting. And in the first phase of it, connecting with other nonprofits struggling with the same things. And that's, we didn't have to write a grant for it. I guess you guys do. So thank you for that. But we just had to say we'd like to be in. So really appreciated. And yeah, I'm looking forward to continuing the work and the enlightenment that we found with our team. The whole team is engaged in this process, which is really great. And really excited to see where we end up.
Yeah, Lynn, and I just want to second, you know, our gratitude for Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. We do apply for funding, but they make it very low barrier. So we are really, really lucky. And I truly believe that like one organization at a time, we can help move the needle on advancing equity in Connecticut. And by increasing our ability to build robust data systems. And I'm just so grateful that Hartford Foundation has leaned into that. They've fully supported it and have given time, right? We talk about capacity being the biggest barrier, and they're really saying, no, take some time.
Absolutely. The funding, finding resources to be able to take advantage of this kind of program is really important. It's not a given. And so it's very special, and we need to appreciate it. We do. Absolutely. So bravo for that. I want to thank you both very much for being here today. It was a great pleasure. It's always great to hear from you, Finn and Lynn, of course. I talk to you all the time, so I'm just tell Finn how nice it is to see her here today and have more of her time. So thank you very much, Finn.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
Thank you guys so much. This was super fun.
Thanks.
Have a great rest of your day. Bye.
You too. Right. Bye. See you later, Jim.
We hope you've enjoyed today's edition of the Impact, a Sustainable CT Podcast. As always, this program is recorded, produced, and copyrighted. Yeah, by Sustainable CT. Thank you for your interest. Thank you for listening. Thank you to our sponsor, the Connecticut Green Bank. Thanks again to Finula Darby Hutchins. Thank you, Finn. And our executive director, Lynn Stoddard, for joining us and keeping it real. And thanks to everyone for taking local actions that have a statewide impact.